live from the podcast studio. This is From Long Distance to Marriage with Rich and Andrea. We're a once long distance couple who closed 5,000 miles of distance and are now happily married.
We talk long distance, marriage, and relationships.
Hi everyone, welcome to episode 89 of From Long Distance to Marriage. This week we have a special guest for you that we're really excited about. We spoke to Orit, who is a, well, the title will be... We struggled with it a little bit, didn't we? She's got a lengthy title. But basically, she's...
Dance movement therapist.
And trauma expert, not specialist, yes. So essentially, she'll talk through it, obviously, in the interview. But she works with women who have experienced trauma, which is affecting their relationships, their current relationships from past traumas. And does this through movement therapy and dance. It's a really interesting, different way to work through trauma that maybe people haven't tried yet who are experiencing issues in their current relationship. There is also a free gift for our listeners. So if you listen to the details in the end and follow the links in the show notes, you can find out all about that and take advantage if you'd like to. Worth knowing that this episode isn't just for women. She does mention that this can work for men. They just specialize in working with women. So we hope you enjoy.
So hey everyone, we've got a special guest this week with Orit, who is a dance movement therapist and trauma expert. So this is, we really hope this is going to be a, it sounds fascinating, so we really hope this is going to be an interesting and useful episode for everyone to listen to. So with that said, Orit, hello, welcome, thanks for joining us, and I'll leave it to you to give a better explanation of what you do than I just did.
Good. Thanks so much for having me. I'm a board certified dance movement therapist. My name is Orit Krug, and currently I help women heal from past trauma, especially after trying so many different other kinds of therapies, so that, you know, as they're in this new relationship, new healthy relationship today, they can really leave the past in the past and enjoy lasting healthy love with their partners today. And my own story brings me here because I was in talk therapy for 3 years by the time I met my husband, and we were semi-long distance. We lived about an hour away, and I almost sabotaged that relationship to the point where we may not be married today. So I did dance movement therapy to finally heal my trauma after the talk therapy wasn't working. And yeah, here we are today, married, happy, and about to have our first baby. So hey, I love it.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. Do you attribute your
healing?
Yeah, the success in your marriage from the point where, you know, that was touch and go. Do you fully attribute that to the dance movement?
Yeah, definitely. Because I just hit a huge wall in talk therapy. I went weekly for 3 years, and towards the end, it was just, yeah, I was really, really aware of my past trauma and how it was affecting me specifically in the relationship, and to very specific behaviors of me sabotaging and all of that stuff. And we broke up about a year into our relationship because I couldn't let that stuff go, even though I had so much mind and cognitive awareness of it. And then I had just graduated from my master's in dance movement therapy, and I was like, all right, I'm going to do this myself and change, you know, really change what my behaviors are right now, because this is the best relationship I've ever been in, and I really don't want to lose it.
So I'm not going to ask you obviously to give specific detail, but, you know, you said that you had certain behaviors that were sabotaging the relationship. And I know a lot of people, you know, what's happened in the past can affect present relationships, and it's a really hard pattern to break. How do we recognize when our behaviors are toxic and sabotage? It's really hard to recognize that in your own self sometimes. So how do people start to identify that?
Yeah, I'm happy to share a little bit about what I was doing. And I think your listeners can relate to, because we were in that semi-long distance relationship, and all of my relationships in the past, if I even want to call them relationships, mm-hmm. were very unhealthy and codependent. And some of the things that I was used to was like this just kind of unhealthy communication and almost obsession and, again, codependency. And so when I started dating Aaron, who's my husband now, and we were kind of this long distance where we only saw each other on weekends, there wasn't as much communication in between. So mm-hmm. one of those things, that was a trigger for me where if I didn't hear from him in a certain amount of time, I thought the worst. I thought, you know, he's doing something else. He's doing something shady. This relationship isn't going to last. I mean, that was all of like my abandonment and rejection stuff from the past. And I would have controlling behavior, sending angry text messages. I would be jealous, even if he was just hanging out with his friends and not talking to me. And I just did not trust him. And I communicated that verbally and non-verbally. And, the way that we can know that is, I think first is if it feels out of control for us. So like, again, I had all this awareness in my mind of like, I know where this is coming from. There's actually no real evidence here that he's not trustworthy. He's never done anything to hurt me intentionally or to go behind my back or betray me. That was all the stuff from the past that my brain and my nervous system couldn't differentiate between back then and today. I knew all that stuff, but I just couldn't control. So if you feel a sense of being out of control with these kinds of sabotaging or unhealthy behaviors, that's a really good indication that it is your nervous system that is hijacking your body and your behaviors. And instead of coming from a place of being able to really be in command of how you want to respond, how you want to bring up conversation, how you want to speak up or just, yeah, connect.
Okay. That's really interesting.
That is really interesting. So are you going to have a follow on question?
I did, but yeah.
Cause mine's a bit different.
Okay. Thanks. I was just going to say as kind of towards the end of that answer, you started talking about the nervous system. And I know that part of what you've explained to us about dance movement therapy is that we hold trauma in our nervous system. Can you explain that and talk about that a little bit?
Well, okay. So my question was related to this too.
Okay. So pose that as well.
Yeah. So I'm going to interrupt it. So, I was just thinking the word trauma is kind of one of those words that can kind of be interpreted a bit differently. Like it can be really severe, like a blunt force trauma in a murder. And then obviously things not quite as severe. So, I mean, are you able to just elaborate or clarify it a bit on when we talk about trauma? I'm assuming that's including things like, you know, people being cheated on abused or whatever, perhaps. But I just thought it may be useful for our listeners if we can just, if they're listening to this and just not sure, do my experiences qualify as trauma or not? I think it'd just be worth kind of giving a bit of a definition to that.
Absolutely. And that's a really good question, because a lot of us who have experienced trauma in the quote unquote not typical way downplay. We tend to downplay our past experiences. And then we feel like, what's wrong with me? Because it's like, I lived a pretty good life. I had a pretty good upbringing, you know, but I'm still behaving this way. So I think that's a really good question to answer. And yeah, I mean, there's the obvious, I guess we can call it trauma, where it's like, there's a big shocking event, some sort of abuse growing up, you know, there's sexual trauma, physical trauma, emotional trauma. There is witnessing, you know, your parents' domestic violence. So those are kind of the more, again, we would say obvious, let's say, but then there's also like your parents got divorced when you were younger, and that whole separation and tension and all of that is traumatic, and they couldn't, you know, they were so caught up in their own fighting and all of that, that they didn't really meet your emotional needs. You could have grown up in a perfectly loving home, but then in school, let's say growing up, you were bullied and ostracized on a day-to-day basis. It wasn't anything super huge and intense. Like, you don't have a specific shocking large event to tell a story about, but it's like those daily things add up and make us feel and make us feel a certain way. And also, really, trauma in a scientific sense is anything that causes dysfunction to the nervous system, which I know is the second question. I can get into that. I was just talking to someone who recently became a new client, and she grew up with 9 siblings, and there's no obvious trauma to tell there, but she didn't really get much emotional attention. There was just so many kids that, you know, you can really count that as neglect, emotional neglect, because there was so much going on. She really didn't get all of the attention she needed as a kid. And then there's, you know, things like grief and loss and abusive relationships and being cheated on, like you said. So yeah, such a huge range.
So it's safe to say then that we all have trauma in some form, if it's as simple as a negative experience being bullied at school, or a relationship where maybe we weren't even abused, but we weren't believed, or something like, you know, so anything really can.
Or losing someone.
Yeah, losing someone you love. So essentially we all have some form of this. Is that safe to say?
I mean, I would say, you know, 99% of us have experienced trauma in our lives. That you'll find a lower statistic if you, you know, looked it up, because again, we kind of culturally tend to downplay our experiences.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we can go through trauma, but it also, doesn't necessarily stick with us as trauma if we bounce back in a way where we can function the same exact way we did before. You know, the what we experienced was negative and it was difficult, but it's not changing our functioning. So, yeah. So what I was saying about the trauma, when it's trauma, it really changes the dysfunction or changes the functioning of our nervous system. And that is if, you know, anything that reminds us of our past trauma will send us into a survival response, a fear response. And that's how you know that what has happened to you in the past is still affecting you today. So basically what happens when we do experience trauma is that higher functioning part of our brains, so like the part of our brains that thinks about the things, plans future events, rationalizes, analyzes, you know, it's like those higher functions offline when we experience trauma.
Okay.
A really stressful event. So what actually happens instead is that we remember the trauma in our bodies. A lot of people, another reason why someone might say, oh, I didn't experience trauma, is because they actually might not even be able to access the memories, or even people who are aware of experiencing trauma, they do try to access the memories through talking, but it's, again, it just wasn't stored in that part of the brain. So we remember most of our trauma in our bodies through different sensations. That's why people get flashbacks or get triggered by certain smells, certain colors, certain environments, because there's really like no words to explain it, but it immediately signals to their nervous system that, oh, something really bad is going to happen here. Even though it's not, it just reminds that it just triggers the memory of something terrible that had happened to them in the past.
So is that like with, I suppose to be extreme about it, with say PTSD, things triggering flashbacks, like noises or things triggering that?
Exactly. Yeah. And PTSD is like a very acute form of all of that, where, you know, you've experienced, you know, let's say a veteran is experiencing those kinds of flashbacks. But yeah, we all, you know, when we are holding onto trauma in our bodies, we can experience that too on a longer term, more chronic basis.
So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, but I had another follow-on question. So for people like me who aren't particularly scientific, Can you explain a bit about what the nervous system is and how it affects us, just briefly? You don't have to get in, you don't have to get your textbooks out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can just kind of think of our nervous system as the wiring that goes through our brains and our bodies. And in the context of trauma, the nervous system is really built for us to survive. Like, this wiring serves us to survive, meaning if it's today, but if we think about the way we used to live out in the wild, there's predators, there's, wild animals. Our nervous systems are responsible for keeping us safe and alive in the threat of that kind of danger. So if a bear shows up in front of you, we can either fight, we can flight, run away, freeze, or we might shut down, we might play dead. Whatever, this is all in our nervous system. Like, it's not a conscious decision. Our nervous system is in charge of us making the response that will keep us alive. So if it's like, oh, I'm not going to be able to fight this bear, or if I try to run away, I'm not going to survive, then your nervous system is going to react in a freeze response to try to, basically, if we're freezing, we are tensing up our muscles, we look less appetizing, there may be a better chance for survival there.
So it's kind of where our instinct lies. Our instinct for survival is all part of our nervous system.
Right. And it's that communication wiring between our brains and our bodies in order to make those responses. And it's going to take over in any situation where there is a threat, which is good. That's good. That helps us survive today. But when it becomes dysfunctional, bringing it back to the trauma, is when we're in a perfectly loving, healthy relationship today with a supportive partner who isn't going to hurt us, but our partners look at us a certain way, or they get frustrated with us on a normal level, and all of a sudden we are freezing up like a bear is about to attack us. So we can't speak up in the conversation. We can't have healthy conflict. We can't have productive discussions, or we react in a fight where we're always aggressively reacting and it's sabotaging the relationship because maybe there wasn't a real present reason to respond in that way. But again, the nervous system reacts in a matter of moments, really less than that. And it hijacks the way we behave and react.
Okay.
So on the dance side of this, the main question I've got really is how does that work? But then I'm also thinking, I imagine that maybe do you experience skepticism around this, like in terms of just people thinking how can this help? Do you know what I mean?
How can dance and movement help, you mean?
Yes.
I mean, the clients who come to us are really, really ready, and there's less skepticism because it's like they have tried talking about their past. They have tried different cognitive mindset, even more body oriented modalities. And they have all the awareness in the world, but they just cannot experience that shift. They can't break those unhealthy patterns with their partners. So the way that they, when they discover what we do and how it works, they're like, many of them are like, yeah, this is actually what I need. I can't believe I've been missing this the entire time. Like, this is the missing piece to access the trauma and heal it through, access the trauma in my body and heal it through movement.
So what is it, you said that these people have, most people who come to you haven't had success with talk therapy. You didn't have success with talk therapy. So what is it about the movement that actually helps heal that talk therapy doesn't get to?
Right. So because, like I was saying before, the trauma is stored in our bodies, and that the part of our brains that we use to talk and analyze and think and all of that kind of rational mind stuff because that shuts down and goes offline during trauma, those memories aren't stored in that part of the brain. So if we try to, you know, if we're stuck in our old trauma and we're trying to talk about it, we may get some really amazing awareness about some things, but most of that, most of what we're really trying to access that's going to help us move forward is stored in the body, and the body doesn't understand verbal language. So that would explain why I hit a wall and why other people are hitting a wall. And even to the point where some people do get to a place where they feel that the talk therapy has become more harmful for them, because again, anytime we're remotely getting in touch with the trauma memories or the sensations or the feelings, it's going to stir up that trauma. And so even when we're talking around the real deep memory, the deeply stored memory, it's going to kind of trigger some stuff, but it's not going to release it, because again, that has to be done through the body and movement.
So essentially, when you're doing talk therapy, you're speaking one language and it's one that your body doesn't translate, and it's not going to get released that way, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, there's some that does get healed, but if you're in this place where you're still stuck after all this time, then you know there's something deeper that can't be accessed through talk therapy or through talking.
And then so how does it work? Like, I suppose, what's the philosophy around it? Is it that I just have so many questions. Like, I suppose if I'm going through this myself, do you first have to access the memories and then go through the movement, or is it the movement itself that helps to release this trauma?
Yeah. So the first, really the very, very first step is to safely and gently connect back into your body. Most of us who've experienced trauma have learned to dissociate or disconnect from our bodies, because one, that's where the trauma is stored. And we've built this belief that, oh, it's safer to not be connected to my body. And two, because our bodies are, are what receive the trauma, so we come up with this, or we feel and we build this belief over time that it's not safe to be in my body. So what often happens in other kinds of body-oriented modalities, or not even therapies, but just sometimes even in a yoga class, or maybe you go on kind of a movement-oriented retreat, people do get into their bodies in not in a therapeutic container, and it stirs up that trauma that's stored in the body, but it's not in a safe way. And so that can also reinforce the idea of like, oh my gosh, it's really not safe for me to be in my body. I just went on this dancing retreat for 3 days and I feel extremely raw and triggered and all of that. So the very first step of doing this work, accessing the trauma through our bodies, is to just gently and safely connect back in a way where you won't disconnect or won't dissociate or won't have another negative experience connecting back into your body. And the way that we do that with our clients is, it honestly looks different for everybody. We all store trauma differently in our bodies, and we all find that we need to express it in different ways. But the very first step is like just simple, gentle movements that, as dance movement therapists, my team and I move with them and we do these movements with them and just help regulate the nervous system as this is happening. So it's not a one size fits all. It's like we're going moment to moment, helping them connect to their bodies, checking in with how they feel, making sure it's a safe experience, and also seeing micro body signals and micro body movements in them that are showing us maybe there is some fear coming up. If there is, we want to make sure they're not going back into a nervous system response, and we help them regulate through movement so that basically their body learns like, okay, there is fear coming up in my body, but I can move through it, which essentially translates to, let's say, an uncomfortable conversation in your relationship, and there's this fear come up, and instead of freezing up or becoming totally defensive, you actually get to move through it and come to some kind of, you know, peaceful discussion and become closer with your partner than before you had this uncomfortable conversation. That makes sense.
Yeah, totally. So you mentioned before too that you had about 3 years of the talk therapy. Is there obviously, as you just said, there's not a one size fits all, but is dance movement therapy something that tends to work quicker?
It does, because we're really digging deeper right away. I mean, we're cutting through the verbal filters that we've all learned so well. You know, right now in conversation, you and I, we are, you know, pretty intentionally choosing our words, even if we're not thinking so much about it. We know as humans how to use verbal language to express ourselves in a certain way and also not say things that we don't want to be heard or seen by others. But because people are not, let's say, proficient in movement language, so as a dance movement therapist, I am trained in movement behavior analysis, and I can actually analyze what's going on with somebody based on their movements. I have that knowledge and training and experience, but the person as the client, they don't know what they're actually expressing on a deeper level with their movements. So they're telling me things that their subconscious or their defense mechanisms would try to hide in words that we can see very, very quickly in movement. So it just gets to the root much quicker. We're accessing deeper nonverbal subconscious memories quicker and can release that through movement pretty quickly as well. So it takes about 3 months to heal past trauma. Even if you've been on a journey of trying to heal your trauma for 10 years, doing this work through dance and movement typically takes 3 months.
Oh, wow.
And then, so how is that on, like, a weekly thing, or is it something that's practiced daily, or?
It's a mix of like a different schedule of live sessions, but also in my Let Love In program, it's weekly and then bi-weekly sessions, but there's also movement stuff to do in between, like home play. We won't call it homework because it's actually kind of fun. And so it's kind of a more of an intensive, immersive experience where you are integrating these new experiences and new behaviors in your body, you know, during the live session and also in between.
Cool. That's really interesting. I don't even know how I want to phrase this question, but I guess I'm thinking about, I've shared a lot about my mental health and things like that in the past and anxiety and stuff. So if someone maybe doesn't know if they've had specific trauma, but they suffer with, can anxiety be trauma? Can that affect you in that same sort of way?
So you don't know what it is, but you have the consequence of it.
And this isn't just personally, because I know a lot of people who suffer with anxiety, maybe they don't know that there was an event in life that caused it. Maybe it is chemical, but I know certainly that I've had anxiety attacks and moments that have given me trauma, and that the panic attack itself has been a traumatic experience. Treatment help with that sort of thing, or does it have to be more of an actual event in life?
Right. Yeah. And that's like, it's a vicious cycle, because often these kinds of, the kind of anxiety that you're describing and panic attacks, they don't just happen for no reason. And there's more and more research coming out that it's not chemical. It's actually a trauma response.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm not going to get into that whole, political rant, big pharma and all that stuff. But also that's a vicious cycle, right? Like your anxiety stems from trauma, and then it creates panic attacks, and then you're traumatized because you're from these panic attacks and you don't know when the next one is coming. Right. So it's really, really tough. And you know, I like to simplify this in a way of saying the anxiety that, not necessarily you, but just in general feel, is your body saying there is something not right here. There's like, it's just kind of your body screaming of like, hey, you know, we're on guard or we don't feel safe. There's something going on deeper that needs to be resolved. And like I was saying, it's really good to have this nervous system that keeps us alive in the face of really dangerous threat. But when your nervous system is constantly perceiving that threat from things that maybe, if we looked at it more practically, and this is not to downplay your anxiety or anyone else's, it's just the way we function.
Right, yeah.
When you perceive what maybe other people would perceive as just, you know, a normal daily thing, but when you perceive it as a huge threat to your nervous system and your survival, then you're going to have those reactions much more frequently and in more situations that that's creating this anxiety and these panic attacks, because there's just these red signals going off because there's something reminding you of reminding of your body of something dangerous, something that was unsafe for you in the past.
That's
for maybe some others, it could be something even in the future, in the present moment, but we're more talking about past trauma here.
Yeah.
So does that mean then that you can get benefit from the dance movement therapy without knowing what the trigger was? And then does that mean, is that an advantage of this, another advantage over talk, where, because I just assume if you've got talk therapy, you kind of have to know what you're talking about, or am I just being naive with that?
Well, I'll answer your first question, where especially people who have come from many years of talk therapy, it is kind of a almost like a relieving shift to be like, oh, we don't have to talk about every detail to heal this trauma, right? We don't have to talk about everything, and we don't, because again, the trauma stored in the body doesn't have words for it. I think I'd like to give an example just to paint a little bit more of a picture.
Sure.
One client that I was working with was in an abusive marriage about 2 years before we started working together. And by the time we started working together, she had shut everybody out, like not just romantic partners, but friends, literally anybody who would just get close to her, because her body was still believing the story that every relationship is going to end up in hurt and, you know, real deep hurt. And so this was her way of protecting herself. And when we started working together, she was in a new relationship. She didn't want to sabotage it, but her heart was so closed. Her guard was up so much. And she felt this, she had that constant anxiety as well of like, anytime someone got close to her, just these red signals went off. Like, it's not safe. It's not safe. Mm. And when we started doing the work together, she realized like she was holding all of this tension and fear in her body. You could see that through her movements. Like when she moved, she would stay really close to her body. She wouldn't open up. She just did not feel safe to do that. And what we did was just helped her slowly melt that guard away, by doing movements that worked for her to, again, not push her into like just unleash everything and open up and just dance. Like, that's not going to be a safe experience for anybody, because that hasn't been safe for her in her life. But really, with like through gradually through movement, perhaps letting one arm open up slowly, and then if that feels safe, letting another arm open up slowly to the point where she could even just open up her body. And I'm moving right now, and I know no one can see me. And to the point where like she doesn't freeze anymore around her new partner, because that was her dominant nervous system response, where she just froze and closed up. And like, if you can just picture her body curling up into a ball, a lot of the work that we did was just helping her open up safely through movement. And then all this other stuff came up. Like, she wasn't really she didn't feel safe to be seen as her. And so that's where some of more of the dance stuff came in, where we moved together in a way where she now could start to be seen by me and work through the fear that came up with that. So that as we worked through that in session, she was no longer self-conscious about being seen in her relationship. She could be more of herself. And there was actually a really beautiful moment that changed the entire dynamic of this new relationship for her, where they got into an argument and one night, and she kicked him out of her room. And she realized, I really don't want to be separated from him right now. And so she went out to the couch and she reached her arm out for him to come back. And I know that sounds really simple, but for someone who's been so guarded and closed for so long, this was huge, where she, you know, she was like, get out. Don't, you know, I don't want to see you, to reaching her arm out, not knowing if he would reach back. And he did. And this just changed the entire way that they had these disagreements from there on out, because even if they were mad at each other, they could still reach out and be vulnerable and invite each other back for resolution.
That's the thing I was going to say was how vulnerable you have to be to reach for someone not knowing what their reaction is going to be. So that's extremely powerful.
So just in practical terms, if you like, for someone who's interested in doing this, I mean, is this something people have to do in person with like a local therapist, or can someone work with you, for example, online from a different country?
Yeah, we actually work with women all around the globe. We've worked with women in more than 9 countries, and we primarily, actually only exclusively, do this work online, not because of COVID. It's just, I quit my other job a little over 2 years ago, and I thought, I want to reach more people. And so I started doing this work online and building my business and reaching women all over the world. So we actually only do this work online, and it works amazing too. It doesn't just have to be in person at all.
And is it one-to-one or group sessions or both?
So we have options for one-on-one and also for small group experiences as well.
Okay. So you mentioned too, that you deal with women only. Is that just a business thing? I'm assuming men can be as responsive to the therapy.
Yeah, it's just who we work with. We also have worked with some men as well. And absolutely anybody and everybody who has a nervous system. So that's anyone listening to this, anyone who's human, because we all have that wiring. Even if you're currently hardwired to react in these negative ways, that's the cool thing about wiring, is you can rewire, you can change those patterns. And there's nobody who's unable to do that. You know, I know what it feels like to feel broken and damaged, being unable to change even after years of therapy. And I understand what it's like to be there, but if you feel that way, it's not true. Your wiring isn't broken. It's just, it's just not wired the right way. And it does take some rewiring in order to heal.
Yeah. It's interesting. You know, I started talk therapy at the age of 5 and in and out until probably my early 20s. And I think even as a young person, like, I'm glad I did it, because like you said, it really does heighten your awareness, and I'm so self-aware, but that's almost more frustrating because I know maybe what a problem is or what's happening or why I'm feeling a way, but then it's like, what do I do now? Like, what do I do with this information? And you just feel like you don't have any tools to actually do something. Like, it's great to have all this knowledge, but then it almost makes it feel worse, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. It's like, I know all this. Why can't I change it now? And it's like, it's this huge mind-body struggle, because your mind is like, do something different, but your body's like, we can't. we're stuck. So it definitely, I totally agree. It's even more frustrating. And we've worked with people who've even had such amazing awareness through the talking. And they're like, I know that I resolved this part of my trauma, so I'm good in this area. And then we start doing the work, and the same exact trauma is like speaking much louder, like, we need to heal this. And they're like, I don't get it. I talked about this for so long. There's, you know, there's no emotional charge around it anymore. Why is it coming up? Why is it coming up again? And it's like, you did heal. You did heal in a layer of it, but you've never gotten to this layer that's stuck in your body. And now we're doing the work to release that.
And so, so it's possible to heal, you know, regardless of how old you are, how many years this has been embedded in you.
Yeah. And it can take longer. It can take on the longer side for people who are a bit older and have been storing their trauma in their body for longer than, let's say, someone who's coming to do this work a little earlier. That's also not a one size fits all answer. Like, that doesn't always happen. It's just important to know that if you are starting quote unquote late, that it could take longer to work through.
That makes sense though.
Yeah, but I suppose, you know, it can be quite common for people to say, oh, you know, I'm too old for that.
Set in my ways.
You know, I've tried everything. But, you know, for those people, there's still hope.
Yeah, I mean, we can't help anybody who doesn't want to be helped. But if they're, you know, if they want to still change and they still believe that they can, even if they're older, they absolutely can.
So I've got a question that is, I guess it's related to this, but slightly different. So can our bodies store trauma in ways that manifest in a variety of ways? So, you know, people maybe who suffer with headaches constantly and there's no real medical problem, or I know a lot of people get like heart palpitations when they're stressed, you know, IBS, things like that. Yeah, can these stem from actual traumatic events or experiences that actually could be the root of what their body's doing?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm not a medical
right
by any means. So, you know, this isn't medical advice, but we do work with a lot of clients who have these unexplained medical diagnoses. And either they come to us and say this first, like, I know this is tied to my trauma, mm-hmm. or we see those results even without that awareness first. Recently in my group program, I was working with a woman who's diagnosed with MS.
Right.
Has had years of flare-ups and has been to so many doctors without any real resolution or relief. And a little more than halfway through our program, she got a checkup and she didn't have a flare-up, or she didn't have a remission is what she calls it. Which not just she calls it, but I guess what it's called. And she's like, I know it's because of this work. I've just been feeling more calm. I'm able to self-soothe and calm myself much, much quicker without going into a stress response, because it is the stress that that flares up
saying that helped, alleviated her MS, or were you saying that it wasn't actually MS, it was trauma manifesting?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be able to speak to that. And it was also, and I'm not even saying, oh, this dance therapy healed her MS or relieved it. But she said, I know it's because of this program that I didn't go back into remission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she still has the diagnosis, and that's, you know, that's a whole nother world.
Yeah.
But, because she learned these ways to not, you know, not have her body go into such a stressful state, because what's really happening, you know, to answer your question a little bit more scientifically, is that even if we do have this really great awareness in our minds, and let's say we're in a really healthy relationship today, and we have convinced ourselves, you know, my partner is safe, I'm in a good relationship now, they're nothing like the person who hurt me in the past, and we believe this in our minds. Our bodies, if the trauma is still in our bodies and our nervous system, that's what's gonna run the show. And even underneath these positive thinking or the affirmations or whatever, the body is still registering danger threats. And so this is all going on in the background, which releases cortisol and weakens our immune system. If our bodies are constantly registering danger, that's what's happening. And it makes us weaker. It makes us more susceptible to sickness and flare-ups if we do have autoimmune diseases.
So is that why sometimes if you're really stressed and run down, you can get ill, really get a common cold so much easier if you're in a stressful place? Could that attribute to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if there's so much stress hormones running through our body and, you know, with the inflammation and weakening our systems, weakening the very system that's supposed to ward off or protect us from these illnesses, then yeah, I mean, I certainly feel that when I'm more tired or more stressed, I get sick easier.
Yeah. And it all kind of happens at once, doesn't it? You get everything at once.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we probably have a couple more serious questions, but I have a very just my own curiosity question. So you were saying that you're trained. So when people start doing their movements and you can understand, you know, what that means and potentially what their body is holding on to and things like that. So is that only kind of in the dance thing, or like, do you have the power to, like, when people are walking, you can tell what they're holding on to in terms of their traumas and things like that?
Well, I mean, I'm not analyzing everybody every moment or anything.
I would.
I'm like, I take breaks from, yeah. And it's not like super straightforward like that. Like if someone was like, hey, can you make up a guide for what this movement means? And you know, people have asked me a lot for that, but it's not really that simple. It's a combination of seeing the movements, being able to analyze what it is, and the particular person and seeing their patterns that come up in movement. So an example is a client who we worked with who was very, very light on her feet. So even as we did something as simple as walking together in session, like she barely had an impact on the floor. It was just so light. And so there's metaphor in that. She isn't really safe or doesn't feel safe having an impact in her relationship, using her voice, showing up stronger. She's very like tiptoeing and more fearful. That's something that, you know, that we can see from the movement. There's more, there's more of a dictionary, I guess we can call it, where there are certain movements that does show us how they tend to cope with their environment. So there's we call it indirect movements, where they're moving in a way that is, their movements are kind of more in taking up space in all directions around them. If someone tends to show more indirect movements in their patterns, then that could very well mean that they don't feel comfortable with confrontation. They can't be direct, or they don't feel safe being direct in their relationship, even during the times that really require it. They might, you know, stand at the doorway going into a party and scan the room before they actually make a movement to enter it. Which is, you know, a really cool way to see, you know, for me, that's something that I do. And I wanted to say, like, none of these patterns are good or bad. It's just the way we use them that makes us respond more healthily in our relationships. But I always had to scan the room in my house growing up to make sure, you know, am I going to get hurt? Like, can I enter this space without getting hurt, or can I enter safely? And so this indirect movement is a huge part of my repertoire. It's just, I used to use it to avoid confrontation. I used to not be able to be able to stay present during conflict. And so in that case, I started work, you know, I started doing dance movement therapy, incorporating more direct movements into my repertoire, being, you know, that's self-explanatory, being able to be more confrontational, bringing up things that bother me without it festering beneath the surface for weeks and then blowing up. So I only know, you know, we can see those movements through working with someone for a period of time. If that keeps coming up, whether we see it, we analyze it the first time around or in a few sessions in, we know that, oh, this movement pattern is reflecting a big challenge and a big problem in their relationship.
That's really interesting. No, it's really fascinating. Sorry, thank you for indulging my curiosity there. Is there anything kind of else? I know we'll talk about something that, you know, you can offer to people in terms of resources, but is there anything else you kind of wanted to highlight or cover as part of, you know, what it is you do or what people struggle with and aligned with this?
I guess that, like, on the note of these different movement patterns, it's also important to share that, like, these movement patterns do represent our patterns of coping and behaving in relationships. And that's the part where we can really see what trauma patterns are stored in our physical bodies and the way that that's being revealed in the way that we actually physically move. And that really, you know, one of the questions earlier was, does it save time? And there's that difference between, even if you're at the point of going to couples counseling with your partner and, or just having conversation with your partner about, all right, this is what I want to do differently. This is how I want to behave differently. I mean, I did this around the time that Aaron and I broke up, where I was like, all right, I know this is my issue. I just got to stop sending the angry text, or I just got to do this differently. It's a totally different experience to say what we want to change in our behaviors. And like, you know, you were saying, it's really frustrating when you know what you want to change, but your body doesn't do it. But when you actually know how to change that on your body first, then you actually get to change the behavior right away without spending all that time talking about how you want to change.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge benefit. Because I think it can get frustrating for both parties. You know, I think even the most supportive partner can start to feel like, yeah, you've told me you were going to do this before, you know, and you don't. So it's really frustrating for both ends.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly where we got to, where he was and still is super supportive and understanding and patient. But it's like, because of that awareness, it's like, are you going to change? Like, you know what you need to do and you keep saying you'll change, but will you? And I was like, oh, like, yeah, I got to do things differently, because our bodies are the vehicle for which we behave and act and interact in the world. So it's just such a huge difference to change those behaviors in our bodies first.
Mm. Yeah. Like, I think, you know, even the most supportive people have a breaking point, you know, everyone can only it depends, you know, how severe your behaviors are, you know, and how long they go on for and stuff, but
they also can't fix it.
Yeah. They can't fix it for you.
If you've got like a physical problem, it's kind of easier to say, well, this is what you need to do.
Yeah.
This is what you need to eat or this, whatever. And then same thing, if you've got car trouble, it's like, I can fix that for you. But when it's like on the mental side of things, like, I think that's, people can be supportive and want to remain supportive. But then I think there's a little bit of frustration when they say, like, there's nothing I can do, and there's that powerlessness that comes with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, if they have asthma, we'll use your inhaler, you know. Right. You know, if you or have a food allergy, well, I'll make sure we don't have that in the house. I won't eat it to support you, or whatever it is. But
there's
only so much you can do if someone has, you know, trauma or mental struggle that they have to work through, which I think is super hard and probably affects a lot more relationships than we realize, that people don't open up about that kind of thing.
Definitely. And I think it's really unfair to ask our partners to try to heal that trauma for us, because they're not qualified to do that. And even if they were, like, it's still not their job to do that for us. And that that's not to say that people are necessarily doing that even consciously, because I was subconsciously trying to, because Aaron was such a healthy, different kind of partner who could support me so deeply emotionally in a way that I'd never experienced before. It's like, great, like, let me work through my trauma. And again, not consciously, but subconsciously, I wanted him to, you know, reassure me. I wanted him to just say and do things that would help me feel better about myself. And I wanted him to help me heal this trauma, but it's so good that he really set some really healthy boundaries with me about that, even though he was supportive, because then we would build a foundation where, first of all, I would have never actually healed my trauma, and I would always need that reassurance from him. I would have never built up that security that I basically was forced to, or else I would have lost him.
Yeah, and I think it's you know, it's important to remember that we all need reassurance sometimes in life, and that's okay, you know, with certain things that happen. But if it's constant and every day, and you're relying on them for that, then that's when it shouldn't be to that level. You know, we all need a little bit of a pep talk now and then, but they're two different things, aren't they?
Yeah, it's like reassurance on a level of, yeah, on a healthy level. And when we feel down and on our lower days, but to ask someone to fulfill that void of self-love or self-acceptance that we really need to build ourselves, like that's never going to work out.
Yeah, it, for them. And it's much more fulfilling to get to that place for yourself. Like, it's more fulfilling for you as a person to get to where you don't need that.
Totally.
And you can be, you know, self-sufficient in that way and not feel like you're sabotaging things or have these insecurities or anything like that. But I feel enlightened. That's really, yeah, I didn't yeah, even know this was a thing until we started messaging you. And
no, and I'm sure this is going to be really helpful to our listeners, because like I said, I've never heard of it, and I'm sure this is going to be an introduction for many people. So so on that note, like if anyone wants to talk to you to find out more or work with you, how do people get in touch with you? And we'll include any links in the show notes as well.
Yeah. So if you're resonating with this, I really want to give you a free entrance, free access to my training. It's online. It's called Wired for Love, where we dig deeper into how to heal trauma from your body, how you can rewire your nervous system and break those unhealthy patterns that are currently sabotaging your relationship. Even if you've been to therapy for many, many years. This is a training that's just going to bring you deeper into how that can all be done for you. Specifically, it comes with a downloadable workbook where you can apply the information to your specific history of trauma and your current relationship challenges. And some people have said that it really has brought them more clarity and even more awareness than years of talk therapy did. So I highly encourage you to sign up. It's at www.wiredforlovetherapy.com.
Perfect.
And are you active on social media anywhere that people could, you know, follow you, learn a little bit more about you?
Yes, I am active. I'm definitely not one to post every day or multiple times a day, but I do have a Facebook page. Actually, I'm most active in my Facebook group. So it's a really amazing community where people are, you know, are experiencing relationship struggles due to past trauma and are supporting each other. And of course, with my guidance to work through that. I even host live weekly dance parties in there. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
That's called the Lasting Love Movement.
Okay. And is that an open group or is that a closed group or?
It's a private group, but it's free. I just screen those who request to join just to make sure it's a safe space.
Nice.
Yep. So
great.
and come dance with us. That's awesome.
Yeah, and obviously you've given the names of those, but we'll, as I said, we'll include all the anyone who's listening to this, just check the show notes and there'll be direct links to that. And then is that your main website as well, the Wired for Love, or have you got another one?
My main website is auritkrug.com. So it's my name in a website.
Cool. We'll pop that in there as well.
Yeah, we'll pop that in there. This has been fascinating.
Yeah, really, really interesting.
Yeah, I'm so glad. And your questions were amazing. I'm like, oh, yes. Let me answer.
Oh, good.
That's always good.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I purposely try not to research things outside of, like, our guests' websites and stuff. Like, I don't want to go and Google and know too much about it, because I really like to ask the questions and learn from the person, because I think it's just a bit more of an kind of aha moment, which is always really exciting. So I'm really glad, especially today, that I didn't do that, especially because it was something I was like, ooh, what is this? I did want to go and Google, but I refrained. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your knowledge and expertise, and we definitely hope that some people will get in touch with you and benefit from how you help people.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. We'll keep in touch. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.